Would you like to reach our film and TV review podcast audience? Do you have a product or service of interest to film and TV home consumers or followers of the entertainment industry? Have a film or show production to publicize? For affordable price plans for all budgets, get in touch and find out about our introductory advertising options. Reach our audience of film and TV viewers and visit our site contact page at filmandtvreview.com, or you can email us at business@filmandtvreview.com. Reach out today. Welcome to filmandtvreview.com. Catch the latest film, TV, and streamed show reviews every week. The views and opinions expressed by the authors and those providing comments are theirs alone. They do not reflect the views, opinions or position of filmandtvreview.com or their respective parent companies or affiliates. Filmandtvreview.com makes no representations as to accuracy, completeness, correctness, suitability, or validity of any information in this program and is for entertainment purposes only. Episodes may contain adult humor and language. For full terms and conditions, see filmandtvreview.com.
Hello there, and welcome to our special edition of Film and TV Review on a recent Star Wars property that's premiered on Disney Plus, and that was Darth Maul Shadow Lord. And, this is, as we are kind of Star Wars fans here, I'm joined by my regular Star Wars fans, Noelle and Sophie, who are our Star Wars experts. And this was obviously a long-awaited character animated series from, of course, The Phantom Menace. Follows Darth Maul after the Clone Wars, and Maul is having to navigate a galaxy scattered, where I guess the Empire has started to take root and everyone's split into fractions, either criminal syndicates or maybe insurgents and so forth. This was a long time in coming. So, I mean, and I could start with like Noelle or Sophie. Were you excited for this? Or, I mean, this is a long time coming, but it's been quite a while, 1999 since The Phantom Menace, when we last saw Maul. But he has made appearances in The Clone Wars, of course. So, yeah, it was in good hands, I'm guessing. But first, I guess we could start with some first impressions of this series now it's finished, like 10 parts. Anyone want to jump in with their first thoughts? Anyone? Yeah, Sophie?
Yeah, so yeah, it was very exciting for me because he's been my favorite character for a very long time. And I've wanted more spin-off content from him. We've gotten it in Clone Wars, we've gotten it in Rebels, very brief appearance in Solo. That was a bit confusing when it came out. None of us were expecting that. But now it's making more sense with this small show. And I think it's been really artfully done. I'm glad that they waited a long time. I know that I remember reading that a Maul film was in development and then it got canceled. And I'm glad that they did that and they opted to trust Dave Filoni with giving him a show, because I think now it's been able to really draw out his character and develop it in unexpected ways. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Noelle. I found that he's been more dignified in this series. You know, they have the tea ceremony, which is very, very impressive. And he fights with one arm behind his back like Dooku did. He's got a very measured way of talking. And his understanding of greater strategy and playing the crime syndicates off against each other And even letting Vader, a spoiler alert if anyone hasn't finished it, but even letting Vader kill Daki rather than killing Daki himself, I think it's showing a greater sophistication to Maul's character. He's seeing strategy, he's acting dignified, he's not just sort of a brute in the way that he used to be. But yeah, I'd love to hear my fellow prequel super fan Noelle on this.
I do think Maul's matured. It's funny you mentioned this because when I was watching it last night, I was literally looking up his age. He's in his 30s in this one. I think all the characters kind of have to age fast between the Clone War, like between episode 3 and 4, because there's a lot going on, you know what I mean? It's kind of like a Great Depression or, the rise of Mao Zedong or something like that. So all these characters age. But one of my favorite scenes in the Clone Wars is where he's like screaming at the defeat of Mandalore, how everyone's gonna die from everything, and he realized that even that doesn't work. So I guess he's like has to be calm and collected because it's the only way to get people to listen. But I do think he has matured quite a lot. I think each time something bad happens to him, whether it's getting his bottom half cut off or his brother dying or things like that, he matures a little bit more. I also think it's as important for his character because I don't think his I'm trying to think how old he is and but he's about what's his name's age, Obi-Wan's age when he dies. But I think it's important for the character growth. Yeah.
It's
He's
kind of
definitely
right. I think the appeal of Maul as an ongoing character, because basically he was just a big visual villain in Phantom Menace, basically. But here it's kind of like over the Clone Wars and especially this series, he's a very vulnerable person. And that's was slowly, I gotta say, getting very sympathetic with him as an anti-hero, especially as his goals are kind of almost now aligning with, I guess the rebels or the fallen Jedi, as in, he has a bone to pick with the Empire and almost wants to bring it down, everything that Darth Sidious represents. But he is very troubled, still troubled and traumatized. And we got to see this a lot, I think, in episode 8 or 7 or 8, where he's this kind of like dark search of the soul, where he is a one of the now. I mean, watching these initially from the series, you this the Shadow Lord, it's kind of like, oh, very visually brilliant music. But I was kind of waiting for, something, a standout episode, and that was one of, strangely enough, that was one of them. Despite the amazing, in alleyway fights and so forth, it is visually amazing, but it is that one-to-one kind of like acting almost. I almost felt like the whole episode was going to be like him and his inner monologue and him look reflecting at the events in this pool of water as he's being cornered. It's kind of monologue almost, and it is like, oh, we are really, in the deep depths of the soul here. And
Well, I think one of the things, not to interrupt, about Maul that's interesting now is he's all, seeing it almost from the audience's point of view, where he's seeing the good and bad of both the Jedi and the Sith. He's seeing the good that the Jedi do, possibly, and the bad that the Jedi do, and also the errors of the Sith, and he's realizing both sides have issues, which I think is very good.
It's
Yes.
go on, sorry.
Oh, sorry, Jason. I was just going to say that I love how reflective he is in turn, and I think that his reflection is also mirrored in the way that the show is designed, in particular the beautiful watercolor design, and every still is a sort of painting in itself, which is really unique, not really something that's been done before in Star Wars. And I think that the thoughts that he's been having, as you said, Noelle, in terms of, reflecting on and kind of taking a step back from the Jedi and Sith and seeing it from our point of view, it's something that I think is quite needed in Star Wars. I think that often it becomes just, fights and battles and things like that, but when you take a step back and see things as they really are, and I think that Maul's doing that, it creates a different level of morality. It becomes less of good versus evil, and it becomes a lot more gray. And Maul actually makes that point when he says something along the lines of, "You're operating under the premise that I'm somehow the villain here, but it's not so simple as good and evil." Very, very different.
Yeah. This.
Especially, oh no, I was gonna say, especially with the gentleman with the mustache. I'm trying to remember his name. But the mustache gentleman, he like as a cop knows good and evil, but now he's realizing with the Empire and all these things that different things matter now that the state of the world that they're living in, with the
That's
universe they're living
so
in.
that's Brandon Lawson, the local police detective. I think this whole season, or this, yes, I guess season is a very arch or collective arch of a seduction of the light side, or especially where, let's say, the second player of, or main cast characters like Devon Ezra, kind of a young Twi'lek Jedi survivor of Order 66, and she's hiding and on the run with her master, and it's where you get a temptation of Maul, seducing her to, as almost he's looking for his own apprentice. And I think, I mean, Jedi's on the run right here. They're pretty powerless and they've been absolutely decimated. So he's offering her, well, you need for me, you to defeat or survive, you should follow what I'm have to teach you because you're not equipped. And obviously she's quite resistant. She's kind of right now, we're beginning at the beginning of the season, you're bad, you're good. But like you said, Sophie, this is where we start exploring the gray side of what you really were and what you're going to really have to do. And even if it's, changes your standpoints and your views, which is, I think, that's happened over the course of this whole season. We've got this relationship with Devon and her Jedi Master. I think Daki, a loyal follower of the Jedi Order. And so you've got these two points or father figures of where they stand, light and good, let you say, in the old sense. But it is a very good tale of seduction also. And from Maul, yeah, Maul obviously has his own motives, but it's a very push-pull kind of thing that develops over this season. I like that as a thing. But what about yourself? Did you? I'm so you said you're pleased with it, and were you surprised by it, or you kind of naturally? I think we've been asking for this from Star Wars for even since The Last Jedi, really, because it has to evolve.
Yeah, definitely. I was surprised by some things. So for one, I knew it was going to be good in terms of because Dave Filoni did it and everything he touches turns to gold. But I didn't know it was going to be this nuanced and this thoughtful and this kind towards Maul. I think that he hasn't really been treated very well by Star Wars in the past. Very underutilized in The Phantom Menace, for example. Initially, it was going to be a different actor who played Maul in that film, and then they cut all of the lines besides two, and then switched the actor and went a different direction. So I'm glad that they're finally filling him out as a character. But I didn't expect it to go in the direction of especially him facing Vader. I know that that's something that fans had been asking for, and I was a bit like, if they do that, is it just going to seem like fan service? I don't think they'll do it. But they managed to do it in a way that was quite thoughtful, I thought, and subtle. So with that fight, I noticed that Vader doesn't utter a single word, and he also fights in quite a dignified sort of way, and you can see how, it takes. I was so shocked at the fact that it would take both Maul and Devon teaming up to even make him stumble a little bit. It showed Vader's power, but it showed it in still quite a subtle way without having him having to say anything. He doesn't have to say a word. So yeah, there were some things that surprised me, some things that didn't, but as a whole, I was really quite impressed with it, and I also like that they echoed Maul's sense of gray morality with Lawson. I also one question I have with the next season is what's going to happen with Lawson's wife, who's in the Empire. I think that that's a loose end that's going to be very interesting in the next season. What happens with her, where they go with that, what happens to their son. I wonder if they're going to try and have some sort of little like love interest between him and Devon. I don't know. But there's a lot of loose ends that need to be tied up.
Because the last time we saw Lawson is he's almost gonna like sacrifice himself, like take on the stormtroopers and get shot, then disappears in the mist. But I can assume, I'm sure he's gonna live and reappear because they. I'm surprised how, because you never know with the series is now with I say with Disney or Star Wars. It's like, is it a one and done almost? Because they kind of like pivot so much. Is it good? Is it got the traction that we want? But it
Well, I
seemed
think
to kind of like already set up this those lines already that you it's so open that it feels that it will continue.
I was gonna say, I think because I mean, I might be wrong, but I think because it's an animated show that they would do another season. They complain that Andor and all these shows were so expensive, but no offense, if it's an animated show and it doesn't have the Harrison Fords in it, you know, that's gonna cut your budget back a little bit. But yeah, that is my main problem with the Disney shows is you're like, are we getting another one or not? Especially because their most successful one, Andor, was said, oh, it's just gonna be two seasons, and then it was two seasons. So, but I did want to compliment the Vader fighting style was so good because it was like just shooing away a bug, basically. He almost didn't take it seriously, but I think that's quite interesting. But the way he fought also reminded me a lot of how he fought in A New Hope. So fighting style, just
This
awesome.
it was when it was like in the Rogue One where it's a first kind of reappearance of where we an impressive it brought back the fear of Vader. I gotta say it got diluted with the prequels. I mean, one word Vader should never utter, and that's Padme. And it's these kind of things when in the suit, it's like, no. But here it is. I'm so glad they went wordless. And like with Rogue One, he's just this complete bulldog or monster that is just a shadow that is just cuts a path through them. And but he kind of like it's his own fighting style. I think Maul has his dexterity, and then Vader has complete sheer power with the force and also of his limbs, and he's just hacking away non-stop. And but he goes for he looks like obviously he knows his enemy. He's got all the intel from the Emperor's files, I'm sure. So which is and is went straight for the legs and kind of like maybe the vulnerability of Maul now.
Yes,
Which
that
is
was
great.
so interesting how much of a liability Maul's legs have proven to be in this season. I kept noticing that too, Jason. It's just every single time, you know, he's kind of having to punch his legs a little bit to keep walking, and then you see him just poor guy, just suffering because of these
It's like
legs.
Doctor
And
House vibes, you know, with the leg issues.
gosh, do you think he should go back to the spider legs then, Sophie?
Yeah, maybe he needs those spider legs, or maybe he just needs a decent doctor. I mean, you think about like, you know, the fake hand that Luke got in Empire Strikes Back. Like, where's that technology right now?
I
He needs that.
good old rebel medicine, yeah.
Did you notice also, this was really cool, and I only noticed it by rewatching the last two episodes before this chat yesterday. When one of the Inquisitors, Merrick, when he says to his buddy, they're on their way, to you. So he's saying that to the other Inquisitor, but then we later find out he's also telling Vader that. If you watch that scene again, you'll hear a few bars of Imperial March, which I thought was really good foreshadowing.
I've got to say, it took me complete by surprise. It's one of now, obviously, you'd seen it just before us because we all met up May the 4th, and before that, you said, "Oh, my jaw dropped," and then you're thinking, oh, "Okay, well, here we are." You're just Prequel fans always the very easy please. Anyway, I saw it afterwards and then I text you like, yeah, my jaw just dropped because I gotta say this was so under the wire. I kind of kept away from, and I think for once the online community were pretty good at not spoiling too much. But I avoided it like nobody's business. But when you see it and you don't expect it, it's like, and I guess as you saw it, Sophie, it's like, whoa, it's like you just stop talking for a minute and your mouth is agape because you just, I don't know, did you kind of know it was going to happen before or did it take you by surprise, Sophie?
I, to be honest, I knew he was going to face someone because it just seemed like we needed a climax at that point. I hear what you're saying, Jason, what you said earlier, that like we needed kind of that standout episode or that standout fight or something like that. So I knew it was gonna be someone big. I thought possibly it could have also been the Emperor. So I was thinking it was either going to be Vader or the Emperor. Now, I think that that it would have made more sense for it to be Vader. I'm glad that they did Vader rather than the Emperor because according to the lore, at that point, Vader was sent as essentially and treated essentially as the number one Inquisitor, just above the Grand Inquisitor. He was doing all the things that the Emperor thought were most important when it came to neutralizing Jedi. So it makes sense that he would be sent from Maul too, to someone, being someone of a similar caliber as like the top Jedi that Vader would be taking out. But I did think it could have been the Emperor because I do remember that, in the Clone Wars, the Emperor does personally get involved with neutralizing Maul. So I thought maybe he'd want to sort of finish the business himself. But I do know that there were a lot of critiques within and beyond the Empire, that the Emperor was sort of nowhere to be seen. And so people were just like, where is he? What is he doing? He's really not getting involved enough in politics. I'm reading this book right now. It's called The Rise and the Fall of the Galactic Empire, and it's written by an actual like professor, and he's written it in a very academic style. And he talks about how within even like within the universe, people were just like, where is the Emperor? We don't see him anywhere. Like, what is he doing?
Well, he deserves a rest because look, considering what he's done, you can have like some time off. Maybe I don't know, surfing or whatever he goes up to. But you wouldn't expect the Emperor just to get down and dirty. Over there in Clone Wars, he was just taking things really personally. But here, he can understand. He's got, once you're in office, you've got things to do, paperwork, death sentence upon itself, health and safety and HR. Anyway, those kind of things. But I gotta say that those fights were the first thing that gets you in this series is just like you said before, the visually. But the fights here were 2-on-3 or 2-on-2. It's like the Inquisitors. You had a very also informative kind of like perspective of Maul now and how he's so readily doesn't really abandon his, I guess, the apprentice or his allies at this point, because at this point he's trying to escape the island, the planet, and they get headed off by the Inquisitors on the chase. But in incredible and beautiful fights, which I think maybe only the animation could do. I mean, I was thinking, should this be a live action one? But yeah, I guess, and maybe Maul does deserve one, quite honestly. But the expense and pulling off what you've got here, I don't think the money would have, or maybe, the prep time to actually do this would have pulled it off. But the animation is just, it just took it up a notch in this series, quite honestly.
I also want to say with the fight scenes, the lightsabers, I think the way they're drawn, it's like a mix between Rebels and Clone Wars, and I think they look really nice. And the way they swing and everything, especially Maul's, looks great. But in terms of the fight scenes, I like what you can tell what's going on. I like when it's multiple on one, you can tell what's happening, and it looks realistic. But when like if it could be live action, one thing I liked about this is all of the different unique species that we don't normally get to see. They're all normally background species, and I don't know if they would have done that in live action. Probably not. That's why in the Clone Wars you get all these fun aliens, and they're all cute.
There's
I
a
think
hand
that's a
clap.
great point. I think
It's
that they
cute.
made a great use of these unique elements that you could really only do via animation. And they incorporated some very cool things into that animation, including one fact that I found, which is that when you he sometimes when you hear the hum of Maul's lightsaber, it's Sam Witwer's screams that they've added. So if you rewatch it, just listen, because once I read that, I was like, no way. And I was listening to it and I could hear it at some different points, just this like really intense and like kind of terrifying scream. And that's the sort of thing you only get with animation and voice act, really great voice acting.
Exactly.
And some of the animation is just incredible. I do remember one scene that I kept rewatching over and over, and it's earlier on in the series actually. And it's when he's threatening Luti Vario, who I love him by the way, he's so iconic. He's threatening him and he's in jail. And he's running his lightsaber kind of across the wall to try and get to Vario's head to try and make Vario like surrender to him essentially. And you can see the reflection of the lightsaber in Vario's eyes.
That's amazing. I like
Yeah.
that. I like the subtlety. The little subtle shadows and things I think are what really like make animation special because you might get that if it were like live action, like for a shot, but you'd really have to think about it. But animation, because each thing you have to, individually do, it makes sense. But the animation, is beautiful with the brush strokes and such. Also, you mentioned the voice acting. One thing I really like about this cast, because Star Wars either casts complete unknowns, it seems, or it casts in some of its things pretty famous people like Rosario Dawson and whatever, or whoever. And I like how some of the actors I knew from other things, but they're not like A or B list celebrities, but they are famous like television actors. Like I always joke that there's actors who've been on like Law and Order and everything. They've been on basically every show of the last 20 years, and some of those actors are in this show, and that's what I really like. Because they're famous if you know what to look for, but they're not like super famous actors, if that makes sense. They're not celebrities.
Yeah, like Richard Ayoade, I know plays the droid, and what's really interesting is he played another droid on another Star Wars show. I think it might have been The Mandalorian. But I think that that was actually a really good touch because if you think about it, just as I'm trying to think of kind of an example, but it makes sense that they would have the same voices. In terms of in the universe, because you wouldn't have a totally different voice for every single droid. Like that doesn't really make sense if that would work. So I thought that was kind of clever. I know also the son is played by this guy that's in Percy Jackson. Yeah. Who else did you hear?
The guy who voices the master, what's his name? Ika master,
Dako, yeah.
yeah.
I recognize the voice, but then I couldn't. Who is it? Who is it? And
Is
then
he the
I
Allstate guy?
yeah, he's the Allstate guy for the American.
He is.
He also played God in Lucifer.
I gotta say the two boots, Richard Ayoade. I found it a bit grating because you can recognize his voice anywhere, and it was, or maybe because the character was the most annoying one, and because he's basically responsible for he's the Jar Jar Binks of this season because he basically goes by the book and just basically lands everyone in it and says, oh yeah, I contacted the Empire and I brought them in, and oh my God,
Yeah, the first half he really annoyed me, bro. Oh my God, I cannot.
it's
Also, why is his
like
name Two Boots? Should he be wearing one boot? Like,
yeah,
bro, you
two
can't.
boots, like, oh
I
yes,
thought
like
his name be Two
why
Oxfords because I wear two Oxford shoes.
did
Like, God,
dead.
I thought he
Seriously.
was a cutie pie.
He well
I like all the
response
trades. Yes, they're all cute.
responsible for various deaths and planet invasion. No. I did warm to the spy bot, and that's Maul's one, who was very quirky and surprised he got killed or whatever, sliced on the as he traversing the acid lake.
You don't think
I did
droids go to
understand.
heaven?
I guess they get put to a server somewhere, maybe
Yeah,
uploaded. So
you know what?
I
I
don't
think
know.
this is the only thing I didn't like about the series was I think that they killed too many people prematurely. Like they killed the bot. It seemed like Lawson is dead. And
The
also, I think most notably,
root
Rook
cast.
Cast, exactly. She was a great character. I really liked her. I thought she was like the voice of reason when Maul was going off and like
Yeah.
just getting really like weirdly obsessed with Devon and forgetting his grand plan. I thought she was great. And then they just killed her. And I was like,
This
ah.
is my main issue with Rogue One. I was getting Rogue One flashbacks. I was like, what
Yeah.
value? Like, this is like, who's making this? This is not the voice of reason
Yeah.
making this.
Was this because she seemed to have such a weight to her, and I is she and I comes on and off with Clone Wars, but was she featured before in any other series or at all? Because she seems so instrumental, and you're thinking, oh, she's got some such a good character and an important one in
Yeah.
Maul's plan, and I was surprised, like, oh yeah, she got dragged into the nothingness, but and you find out it's Vader and there's no coming back from that
Yeah,
almost. But
I
I'm like
wish it hadn't been
disappointed.
her.
Yeah, I kind of wanted her to. She's such an important yin and yang to Maul's, because he can be up and down in his mood. He really does
Yeah.
have his either, I say panic attacks, but it's more like up and down. Feel sorry for himself, and then he gets agitated, and she's such an important part of the his stability, I think, and it's a bit of a shame,
Absolutely. She's
kind of.
so steady
yeah
and she's got a lot of foresight. She's very
yeah
strategic
yeah
and she's got a lot of like dignity, which
yeah
even though Maul is more dignified in this season, as you say, Jason, he does kind of just randomly lose it still. But that's Maul, isn't it? We still love him.
He
He's
has
just
mental
crazy.
issues. He's got issues, and he
So
needs
did
out.
Anakin, though.
Well, yes, exactly. I did read that she's a noble woman on Mandalore, Lady Cast, and that's part of why she's so disgusted when some of the Mandalorians are going to turn on Maul. She's kind of just like, ugh, peasants, of course you would do this. Oh
Yeah,
my God,
she's
I'm forgetting that.
well-written for those lines, which are not a huge amount, but yeah, her actions and the such really nicely drawn-in character for that. But well missed, but who knows? I guess I think the thing that now in the final battle, Maul does a bit of a dirty, because with so it's him and Master Dako against Vader. And I think maybe he's not going to mention this when he gets back to the ship, but he does leave Master Dako in the lurch with
God.
Vader. My leg is acting up again, and he kind of and I was surprised Master Dako was actually such a good fighter. I mean, to take on Vader basically on his own for great periods of time, and Maul was really. Was not a match for him at all. You always wonder how, this Vader and Maul, but you kind of see it's a different league whatsoever where Vader is now. And but Master Dako really held his own despite his age and so forth. But kind of left in the lurch by Maul almost purposely, almost. And then back, I guess, because he knows the prize. For him, he's back in the ship where he's a new apprentice almost, and it is part of the last part of the corruption of the apprentice of
I really like Devon for a few reasons, but one of the ones that I don't like see a lot in Star Wars is because in Star Wars we always see very rich and very poor people. And even though the Jedi are humble, they're taken care of. You know what I mean? They're like the Pope, you know. But I understand her point of view in the beginning where she's like used to a certain lifestyle and now doesn't have it because she's used to it at the Jedi Temple. I mentioned Sophie mentioned this when we were talking, but I like how she's not sexualized. I like her as a character. I think she's a good, well-rounded character. I wish she had a different accent though, because I feel like her voice, I feel like we have a lot of Americans and I want more
Mm.
non-American people. But I did really like her. And I like her connection with Maul. Maybe she'll go more Grey Jedi path.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a really interesting point about her voice, Noelle, because I know in the Clone Wars, in terms of, the accent world building, the Twi'leks were all French, or they had like a French sort of accent. And she sounds incredibly American. So that makes me wonder if, now maybe I'm just totally over nerding out on this and overthinking it, but
Yep.
I wonder if that means that she was taken from Ryloth before someone like Aayla Secura was. So was Aayla Secura able to like grow up a bit longer on her home planet before joining the Jedi Order compared to Devin? I don't, or it even is Devin from a different planet and then was taken to Coruscant? I don't know, but I really like Devin's character too. I love the scene where she picks them all up in the car, and they
Yeah.
start blasting that music. I thought that was
Yeah.
epic. I at first like I liked her, but I thought she seemed a bit boring. But then as they continued to develop her, and I think it was mostly her master kind of inhibiting her that made her seem boring. But when she broke free of that and just got to be her, I really liked her. And I was always just getting so frustrated with Iyo Diodaki because he, every time she expressed any level of individuality, he was just putting her in her place. And I think that that was, I mean, I think it shows again, I mean, that's always the problem with the Jedi in that era is they're so bureaucratic. They're so just follow the rules, stay in your place, don't be an individual, that then people are going to fight back
No,
against
unfortunately.
that.
Yeah, I think it kind of like essentially what was in the Phantom Menace. That's why you have, Qui-Gon Jinn. He represented, you, when you lose individuality and then you kind of follow this just doctrine. Whatever your background or what, well, your discipline or your sensibility, and it just crystallized them, and they couldn't evolve because they were not. And I think it's exactly where what the fault of the Jedi were in this. It's the root of what the fault was, and it's illustrated here. And it's what we wanted, I think, the sequels to kind of address, because you need to show. Hey, even Luke took that journey, right? He kind of like, the left and the right, it's Yoda saying, and the Emperor, kill the other one, but he chose not to. And then this is the through line I wanted to see in here. I mean, it's much more open, interesting debate. And I think, well, she's an angry now. I mean, she's just mad that her master's been taken away with her, and then now, under the influence of Maul, she's either going to be a Sith ally or what, or she'll be in conflict. Be interesting to see which way they fall. I'd actually like to see complete, corruption of her, and then if it has a season two or three, which are an interesting journey, because I guess you never. I thought maybe with Disney you wouldn't explore it as much because you really want to stay in your lane, but. Here they have been allowed to, and it makes it very. She's become more interesting because she's grappling with it. It's a corruption of her soul, and it's interesting to see how she battles that. And so we'll see. She did adopt the red lightsaber, I guess, didn't she? Because she took
Yeah,
Maul's.
because her spell. I don't know why Jedi are so fine with their lightsaber like falling too often. Did we forget what happened in episode two that the lightsabers real life? I feel like I see this so much in Star Wars, especially the newer things, where people just lose their lightsabers and they're like, eh,
What, you think they should have a string
what?
and then like on a wrist or something?
Maybe. But I like how this series portrays the dark side in its various ways. I do think it's done really well. So I'm interested to see if she falls, or maybe she just wants to learn all the things, you know?
Yeah, kind of a rounded kind of like warrior, I think. But more, I kind of like really just sympathizing and really just feeling for him. It's kind of like, oh. He's because he's so troubled. He is a troubled person, and he's got so much. And it's not. It is his show, but rightfully so that he's not the strongest person in there, as in mentally or With his issue, and it's just such a great anti-hero to
But
then kind of round it out.
I really, as much as, he is my favorite character in Star Wars, I really hated him when he left Daki behind, which shows how well they animated that scene because I just saw the utter look of betrayal and then how small Daki looked compared to Vader. And just, and then, Vader goes like full beast mode and just starts like walloping him with his lightsaber. And just, oh, I found that to be so moving, actually. And I mean, they never used to be able to do this sort of thing with animation, to like show betrayal, pain, and shock in someone's eyes. But that's what they did with Daki, and then just making Vader look, as as you said, Jason, earlier, as imposing and terrifying and huge as he is in the originals. I thought that was really well done and really brought an emotional reaction out of me. It was really interesting seeing Vader go back to, how we saw him in the originals. I always have thought, though, that just this is just cycling back to a point that you made earlier about how Daki really held his own against Vader for a long time. I do think Vader is kind of like Maul, and I think that they subtly made this point too. Vader is inhibited by his suit. It gives him sheer blunt strength, but it does cut off some of his abilities with the Force. He still is very powerful in the Force, but I do wonder if he got to use his full dark side abilities and wasn't in the suit, what he could do. Because there's certain things that just he's just not good at because he doesn't get to use the Force in the same way that he used to. I was thinking in this series and also in Obi-Wan, he gets foiled by a bunch of rocks. He
Rocks and
literally
sand.
rocks and
Oh
sand.
no, not the sand again. Oh.
I was like, not again. This man just
Yeah, the
keeps getting
rocks.
defeated by rocks. And that would not happen, I think, if he wasn't as clumsy as the suit makes him.
Just like Maul's legs. Well, they're both almost like a tank, where a tank can do so much, but at the same time
It's
can
kind of
be destroyed.
Yes, immovable force, and then it just goes forward, which is why the Emperor just kind of just uses him as this kind of like, tank to go in and just destroy. But it's really just point and direct. But anything else, it's not much of not treated as a human anymore, or as a person, which is sad for him. But internally, he's stuck in his own prison. But maybe they'll appear much more. I actually, so with this season, I was very much, I was kind of like pacey and thinking visual really nice, but then every so often you have a fight and then Maul in a, but then the last two or three episodes absolutely just put it over the edge, and that really kind of like really resonated, and it just kind of like an exciting product about Star Wars has come out again. And it's very rare, once in a while you get excited about what it can bring to you, and then it just takes us to school when it just shows us how what can be done. All right, well, I guess we're wrapping up, but it's basically it's I gotta say this season, and I'll ask you, but this season for me it's like a great beginning act of a for Devon's character, for Maul. I like to see where how he matures or changes, or what happens to him. I'm always going to stay in this path. I know, but ultimately a bad path. But he's going to do a lot, I think, and it is intriguing from a character point of view what's going to happen. But what about you two? Are you excited about what's to come and reinvigorated?
Oh
What's
yeah. Oh yeah. I was so happy on May the 4th when I watched that series finale. Well, season finale, hopefully not series finale. Because it really surpassed my expectations and I was assuming it would be good, but it was just excellent. And as I said earlier, so many interesting directions that the next season can go in with Mrs. Lawson, well, I suppose ex Mrs. Lawson, who works in the Empire, seeing how she's going to enter the fray and get involved. I wonder if she will sacrifice her son or something like that, if we'll see kind of what the Empire makes people do and what like the impact that the Empire has on families. I think that'd be very, very interesting. I think that it could be interesting to explore the limits to droids and like droid loyalty through Two Boots. I have a feeling he might turn on Lawson because he has this intense drive to follow protocol, follow protocol, follow protocol. So I think he might revert back to his old ways and betray everyone again. I could see that happening. With Maul, he is now sort of on his own in terms of he's lost all of his supporters in Mandalore, m almost all of them. They've all turned on him or died. But he's, collaborating with Crimson Dawn. So it'll be interesting to see how he pivots from his old supporters to his new supporters, who I would suppose that Crimson Dawn are not going to be as impressive fighters and have as impressive of a lineage as the Mandalorian. So it might be a downgrade for Maul. So we'll see if Maul sort of settles into, leading people that aren't quite as up to snuff as the Mandalorians were. And I think that Devin will continue to kind of fall into herself, become more of an individual, and continue to operate in this gray area. I don't know. I don't think she's gonna go full dark. I think that having someone like Maul as a teacher will lead her more in a gray direction than a fully dark one, but I may be wrong. Those are my thoughts.
I think that the show, like all of these animated shows, have started to learn from each other what we like and don't like. I think it had the perfect tone. I mean, it was a bit slow in, at the start, but I think the show will continue to go on and compare these worlds of training a Jedi, but also the dark sides of the Jedi and the Sith and all their issues, and that'll be good for Devin. But at the same time, these people try to survive in this world where the rebellion isn't there for another season of this.
Okay. Right. Well, that is the end of our Star Wars special review. Thanks to our Star Wars experts in residence, Sophie and Noel, and for you at home, see you next time.
We hope you enjoyed this film and TVReview.com episode. Catch the latest film and TV reviews, together with regular episode content from the world of film and TV every week. See you soon. Would you like to reach our film and TV review podcast audience? Do you have a product or service of interest to film and TV home consumers or followers of the entertainment industry? Have a film or show production to publicize? For affordable price plans for all budgets, get in touch and find out about our introductory advertising options. Reach our audience of film and TV viewers and visit our site contact page at filmandtvreview.com, or you can email us at business@filmandtvreview.com. Reach out today.